I'm Jelena Sivolka. I am from Serbia. I get bombarded very often with a lot of texts. So if you get another Jelena from Serbia, she's going to tell me all the texts. If you send her, you're thinking you're sending it to me. That happened last year too. But I am psychologist. I'm a mom of three kids. I'm married to a pastor, an American. That's where the accent comes from. We live in Serbia. We have a 29, 25, and 20-year-old daughter. And our youngest daughter has severe autism. And I heard the gospel at the age of 17. At the age of 18, I said, if this is really who you are and you say you are, here I am. And I have not had a day when I regretted that. But it's certainly been a journey. I wanted to study theology. I ended up studying psychology. I finished at theology, if I finished, I don't know. But I did a PhD in Romania. And yes, I am half Romanian. My mom is Romanian. I love Romanians. And on mental health and how is pain and suffering shaping, actually, and affecting among the people with severe mental illness, their attachment to God. That was my thesis. But I certainly don't stand here because I know it. The more I know, I just know how little do I know. And I am honored that we're going to have these amazing speakers. And if you would have asked me, I would totally be happy if somebody else will stand here. We really get to learn from the people that have great experience. But I think there is so much knowledge in this room and so much that you bring here. So let's just be open to share, to connect, to encourage each other, to just be here for each other. And I think it is a lonely place sometimes to be a Christian in our surrounding. It is a very lonely place. If we choose to sit with suffering and pain, it could be very lonely and very overwhelming. So I am, I'm really, really glad that the topic we're going to have, of course, we picked the topic, so we're really happy about the topic. But knowing yourself and knowing God, and I think it is really interwoven. And as I said, I really feel there is a lot of knowledge here. So I am, and what in the world can you do it in an hour? So I am just going to scratch the surface, and I'm going to encourage you to dig here and to ask. There is no way you can really know yourself without knowing God, and that's where the knowing of yourself starts. And that is the best place to know who you are. And I'm very blunt and very open, and you're going to hear about my messy family I grew up in, but that's not the family that defines my future. That the family has been shaping me, but it's my Lord's hands that are, I hope and I wish and I pray that that is who is shaping me. So all of you are in the business of counseling in some sort, in your church, in therapy. The most important thing that you bring to counseling is not the skills. It's not the knowledge. It is you. And I hope you bring Jesus. I hope you bring what he has done in you. And if you're not aware who you are bringing, who you are, and what you bring to that table, that can be very distractive. You know, and there are words that psychologists use and therapists, but that can really impact which direction you're going. There are things that people are going to tell you that is going to trigger a lot of things in you. So you better know who you are and certainly know who you are in him. And it is really, I'm just scratching the surface here, but I really want to open this topic to every one of you. And I hope you're going to chew on this and think. There are some great books we will gladly recommend to talk about, to read on this topic. But it is very, and very boldly, I call it transformational knowing, because it does. When we are discovering who we are in relationship with him, that transforms everything. When I'm deeply aware who my Father is, I speak differently, I talk differently, I expect differently, I ask, I stand differently, and then certainly that's what I bring in. Search me, O God, and know my heart. I love this psalm, and I very often use it with the counselors because it's a very There's so much in this psalm, but I love how it ends. You know, where can I hide from you? Where can I go? It is very overwhelming to be known by God. And sometimes I use this analogy, and it's not the greatest, but if you go and see the doctor, and depending on which specialist you go and see, you have to take some of your clothes. And some of them is very humbling, and some are very revealing. You stand naked there with some of them. And it's for them to help your body and to help you. I don't know when was the last time you stood naked in front of your father. But I love that David is having this struggle here. Even like, where can I go? Where can I hide? Because you're in front of me. You're behind me. You know my thought even before it comes. You know when I stand. You know when I sit. He knows everything. And that is overwhelming. All the words that you don't say and you think you're good because you just didn't say, you know, he knows. All the things you didn't do and you wish you did to someone, all the things and all the everything. We're a messy, sinful people. And all the Old Testament messy people, well, we are that. And he knows all of that. And search me and know me. Know my heart. I'm going to try to bring from, I was trained in TA, transactional, not transactional, transactional therapy. And I'm going to bring that as a framework for understanding, self-understanding. So very briefly again, I don't know if you had a chance to do, I did send you a little questionnaire, and I don't have it here for, like, you should have that in your notes in pre-reading. And I've been coming to this CLF, and I know that maybe the only pre-reading you did, it was in a car between the naps or when somebody else was driving. I get that. But I hope you had a chance, especially when we come back again on this with the pastorals, when I have some practical steps. So I hope you did it. There are two questionnaires, and then one is from which ego state did you function mostly. So that's the one that I asked you to do it. And the other one was on the Enneagram. So if you did, that's great. If you didn't, you have a chance to do it eventually. And it could be very helpful for you even to get to know, especially when you get in a conversation or with an argument with someone from which ego state you are talking to. I'm going to go, again, very briefly through it. But it's really, I'm bringing this as a tool. So please, this is not, you know, it's not that all the knowledge of yourself you're going to find here. And as I said, we really get to know each other in searching and knowing him. But this kind of gives us some ideas and some helpful hints where we, from which, how do we function? How are we raised? So there actually talks about five ego. The TA talks about the five ego states. And it actually, you've probably seen this picture, that there is a parent, there is an adult, and there's a child in every one of us. Parent, adult, and a child. And in parent, we have a nurturing parent and critical parent. Critical parent and nurturing parent. And in child, we have a free child, but then we also have a free child, but we totally have the adaptive, and we have rebellious child in us. And we, the healthy adult, should be all of this. And this is where, and I'm going to, as I said, if you did a questionnaire, that could be very helpful. You can see which ego state you function most from. But the critical parent and nurturing parent, and here I have just few sentences that kind of are, I cannot really say typical, but they come from a critical parent. Critical parent are all the moral and ethics that we have, and critical parent and nurturing also from the parent. But you should always turn your work on time. That will be a critical parent. Sometimes we have that. We speak from the critical parent. Sometimes we have a critical parent talking in like inside voice. You know, I will do something stupid. I can totally still hear my mom saying, "What in the world were you thinking?" You know, and it's like there is that just voice there that kind of follows me. A healthy person should exercise several times a week. That will be. And there's some good things that we get from nurturing parent and from critical parent. If you really want to listen to teaching in the evening, the plenary, you better be on time. That will be a critical parent. So we get a lot from seeing a critical parent there, even though There's always very child there. Once in a while, they try to cover it in humor so they think it's going to be easier. It does get easier, but there is a critical parent. You did not load the dishwasher right. You should treat people with respect. Those are all the messages from a critical parent. Get your work done before you go and have fun. Nurturing parent will be, you're very creative. I love how you think outside of the box. You work so hard on this, and it shows. You really need to take better care of yourself. I enjoy spending. These are some of the messages that we received. Some of the messages that we give to our kids. Adult is, and it gathers information from both, and then it communicates to the others, and it makes the majority of the decisions should come, even though not always come from adult. My exam is coming soon. I need to start studying. I'm doing best with the resources I have. These are some of the states that the ego state adult has in sentences. What evidence do I have? So adults deal with facts. And then there's a child, a free child. I want to try this. I don't think what others think. I love this. I'm angry. I'm sad. The free child is very much connected with their needs and their emotions. And then there's adapted and rebellious child. You cannot tell me what to do. Rules are stupid. I make my own. I want because you said to. I will not be going to gym because everybody's doing it or everybody's pushing me. I'm not going to do it right now. And it's this kind of like, so now if you have, I mean, I'm just going to do for fun things. Like just, okay, if this is, let's say this is my husband and this is me. And you know, this is ideal situation. We are connected with all our parts. But the conversation will start, you know. Like, for example, I can say, oh, did you empty the dishwasher? And he can do it. He doesn't do this, but he can do it. He's like, really, do I always have to do, or like, well, this would be actually, do I always have to empty the dishwasher? Why is that always my role? But that's how the conversation gets complicated. When Jesus talks, he very often talks to our parent, to our child, and to adult. He can, and that is the best way to actually communicate. But we have a tendency to do, and I don't know if you did the test, and you can, if you did the test, you can share those results, but, you know, with somebody and kind of reflect. But these are, of course, the TAs, you know, they kind of complicated all of this, but I just picked one approach. And these are some of the projection and contaminations that we can have, the ego states issues. Projection, we heard of this, but you project things that you are dealing with on somebody else, mistakenly assuming that others are thinking, feeling, or acting from a specific ego state. So if you will ask somebody, can you tell me, please, what time is it? And they will tell you, why are you not carrying your watch with you? That will be his. And then the best thing is, well, I usually do, but right now I don't have, so if it's not a bother. But whatever, you know, like trying to come and see where this is coming from and how this is. But we project our own internal dialogue on the others, distorting reality. He is pushing me on a purpose. My boss is, you know, doing that on purpose. He really doesn't like me, or, you know, as you can see. Contamination with the adult ego state is contaminated by rational beliefs from a parent or a child. And sometimes we even have this. Sometimes we have a very critical parent and there's an adult and a tiny child, or sometimes we have very, let's say this is a parent, and in the beginning, the child is just a child. These are my needs. This is what I want. They're still not adults there. There are some sentences that mom and dad are saying, but sometimes the parents actually kind of neglect their child, and this is a symbiosis, the unhealthy. So it is, again, I just proposed one of the ways we can look at each other, look at our upbringing, and also look at ourselves and how we function. Very often, assuming, and this is really, these are all needs and our emotions, but assuming that they're facts, that this is because I feel this way. He told me something, and I'm sad. He must be hurtful, and he told me something horrible. So that is, but it's kind of, I don't know, helpful, so you can use it, the things. I am going to go right now. I mean, if you are there to follow the outlines that I gave you, you can see that there are parts that I talked about, knowing yourself and knowing God. And in knowing yourself is, you know, framework for self-understanding. But then there is something that our parents did to us, and it's kind of like we are stuck with. And I'm going to go very quickly to healthy developmental stages, what our parents should have done. or we should have done, very quickly. Enjoy the baby. Their couple wants to have a baby. They're delighted to new baby. They give the message, I enjoy you just as you are. I love you. They set their needs aside. Ideal parents have the maturity to set aside their needs to meet the child's needs. Time and attention are given. Parents' stress and frustration is processed somewhere else. They're there for the baby, and they're okay to put their needs aside. Encourage expression and provide structure. Ideal parents provide structure and routines for little one to feel safe and secure. Parents teach age-appropriate skills. Parents teach toddlers that sometimes they have to wait to get their needs because mommy and daddy have things that they have to do. So finally, their parents' needs are right there. So you see, I have to do it. Parents offer lots of different play and learning experiences. Teaching and setting limits. Responsibility and privileges are added. As the child ages, parents have limits and protect the lessons while helping them reach the independence and adulthood. Principle and value systems are incorporated at appropriate times. And then launching and encouraging. The parents are supportive, let the kids leave the nest. They delight in their children, emerging self that is growing while nurtured. A very happy story and very happy ending. And if you didn't get that, I'm surprised because I totally got it. That is the ideal story, an ideal parents. Even though I love to be reminded there was a set of kids that have ideal father and they messed up. So if Adam and Eve messed up and they had ideal father, then there's grace for every one of us that ever aged teenagers. So there is certainly grace and mercy for that. But because the things just didn't go the way they should in this broken world, there are things that happen to us. Healthy parenting provides the differentiate itself. There is me, there is parents in me, there is adult in me, there is a child in me. And I am not suffocating anyone of this part. I am free to be child, I'm free to dream. My needs are important, my emotions are valid, they are important. The facts of the life and how the things function. And then there is that critical and nurturing parent that I'm aware of. But secure, content, and not defensive in their own unique identity, reflecting an ideal parenting scenario. Can you name some of the things that your parents did that helped you grow into independent self? I'm not saying that your parents didn't do anything, something good, but it's something that maybe with the next one you can connect. But we were all shaped by our imperfect parents, and we are shaping our children. We, as imperfect parents, are shaping our children. And sometimes that broken self is being repeated. Sometimes we bring, you know, even last year when we talk about trauma, it is, and certainly when we talk about transgenerational trauma, there's just so much there. I am kind of stuck in a sandwich between, you know, having a child with disability that still needs us and having an aging parents that really need us. And I was raised by my mom was a single mom. My dad was in prison because he was accused to work for Russians. This is the lovely times of communism. But he was not there. He was not in a picture. And at the moment, actually, all three of us, my sisters and I, take care of both of them. And it's really hard to take of somebody who is not there and who is hurting you. My dad, whenever every time he came in a picture, he was very hurtful. And sometimes for me to have a better understanding is just I think of my dad the first 5 years of his life. I don't know how, I mean, it's in first 5 years, he was born in 1940. His brother died. His mother buried his older sister. So his sister died. His dad was in Dachau, in prison. There is a war, and that's the first 5 years of his life. And this very broken man was supposed to nurture me, to love me, to do any of this. So it is overwhelming and messy story. But that is not. And this is sometimes... where we need to be healthy and free, very often our self is very much wounded. Parents that are emotionally wounded or immature will at times take their frustration out on the child, and they will use the child for their needs. We're not surprised by that scenario. Not good enough child constructs another personality. What happens to us? We start to present ourselves the way we think that they're going to like us more, or they're going to embrace us, or what they acknowledge and praise. And it's in their brokenness they're doing their best, and we are doing the best in our brokenness. But what happens, it's actually how the false self appears, is that at the core of the false self is a desire. That's David Benner. So I'm trying really not to overwhelm you with the names, even though you're going to get the books and the list. At the core of the false self is a desire to preserve an image of ourselves in a way relating to the world. This is our personal style, how we think of ourselves and how we want to see us, how we want them to see us and think of us. Can you recognize some tendency in yourself to try to impress others, look a certain way, while hiding other aspects of yourself you don't want them to see? I think that is just, in one way, I don't think God is playing tricks on us, but it seems that this, you know, false self that we love to present to others, that's the self we bring to church, that's the self we bring to God. And it's really hard to build a relationship. But also, it seems that the older we get, that those barriers kind of fall. And it is hard to be nurturing and loving to my father, who was never, I'm speaking of this earthly father, who was never nurturing and loving, and who is now, he was a hard man, but now he's mean and harsh. Honestly, I cannot do it. And I struggle. But what are some of the tendency in me to present my, what are the things that I decided to do when what is that false self that is in me that is hiding? Ah, the art of packaging. I mean, I'm like, before I bring the good news, I'm totally going for bad news, I guess. We do learn to hide fear behind the mask of courage, hatred behind the guise of love, anger under the veil of calm. I just put a few here. Indifference cloaked in sympathy. We learn how to present ourselves in a best possible light, a light designed to create a favorable impression and maintain our self-esteem. And there are the lies and the truths that we all grew up with, that you are valuable more if you bring good grades, if you behave better. I very often mention this because, I mean, having three kids, having a child with severe disability has been a profound for me to actually comprehend who my father is. And to also see what are a lot of lies that I believed, that I was shaped, and that I was bringing to my children. And it's, if I can love Hannah for who just she can just be, can I just love Sarah and Benjamin the same way? Or they do have to bring good grades, and they do have to behave well, and they should bring grandchildren, and they should go to church, and they should do. If I can just, Hannah just is, and that's how our father is. You can just be, and he is crazy in love with you. So it is so important to understand, this is what we bring. This is the mess that we have. Yes, my genogram is messy. They're alcoholics, they're betrayal. They're just, it's messy. My family heritage, but you know what? It's try to find a good family in the Bible. It's messy. It is messy. We are messy. And what do? We bring the fig leaves to cover some of these things. So for me, the message that I lived with, and it's that kind of like the Enneagram, we're going to touch that. I'm going to do that more with pastoral. It is, for my family, if you are successful, you're worthy. In the world, you should not trust. You should really not trust anybody in the world. And that probably kind of goes with the whole Serbian nationality. You should really not trust anybody. Like, who knows what their motives are, you know? Like, oh gosh, look at that talk. That is, who knows what's behind there. It's just so cynical. There are so many that, I mean, we learned through time and through years growing up, can we really trust? And if the parents were not doing the way they should do in the best case scenario, if that didn't happen, it is really hard to trust adults. It is really hard to trust people. But what happens with our wounded self? And how we go from there? And what do we do? And one of the things that we do, because there are so many things and so many lies that we believe in. And one of them, the first lie, we could be like God. We don't need God, because we could be gods. Displacing God, we become a God unto ourselves. We become the false self. The core of false self is the belief that my value depends on what I have, what I can do, and what others think of me. That is a hard thing to live to. What I have. So it's kind of like, it was interesting to listen about the judges, and he had 30 children, and then he had 20 children, and he had, you know, and of course the donkeys are included, you know, and my children did finish college, and they are going to church, and they're involved in a ministry, and they have 3 grandkids. Would you like to see the picture? They're doing very well. And then my daughter did this. And I have to say, I'm totally the sucker for all of that. But for Hannah, I'm like, oh, my gosh, I just love you who you are. Not always, but I do. But Sarah, certainly, you have to do it. Well, you don't have to do it. You have to do it double because Hannah's not doing it. And I need to show those pictures of grandkids eventually. And I want to tell the others, this is what my daughter did, and this is what my son did. And it's like, well, no pressure here. And then, with all the pressure that our parents put on us and with all the pressure we put on our children, what are the fig leaves that you cover all the things that you cannot do? All the failings that you are doing, all the, what is that false self? What are the things that we cover? And what are the things that we do? Because it is, and please know me, know my deepest thoughts, know my ideas. And what if the deepest thought is, what kind of God you are when there's so much suffering here? Can we ask him that? I mean, in counseling, when you come and when you walk with somebody in their brokenness, in their suffering, in their pain, it is gonna question everything in you. It is gonna question your theology. It is gonna question who your God is. It is gonna question, do you pray or not pray, and how do you pray? Do you trust God? I really thought that I'm a woman of faith until I had teenagers. And then I realized, I guess I don't trust you with them. Apparently, this is all falling apart. So we all have our moments when we are seeing that the fig leaves are just very itchy and they don't really fit. So, David Banner, the false self is the tragic result of trying to steal something from God. I love this sentence. That did not have to be, we didn't have to steal. Have we dared to trust God's goodness, we will discover that everything we could ever most deeply long will be ours in God. I think coming to God and telling him, and it took me a while when I first came to God and said, I cannot be Hannah's mom. You made a mistake. Honestly, you know what I feel God told me? You cannot be Benjamin mom's and Sarah's mom, but you thought you could without me. I did. But when I first came, when you come naked in the presence of the king, he dresses you with a dignity and honor and love. But that doesn't happen if we come as our false presentable self. So I am pleading here, please come as who you are to him, because that's the only way to meet and to see who he really is. And who we really are, deeply sinful, to the core of our being, amazingly loved and cared for and redeemed by his son. So what are, my compulsive pursuit of accomplishments and the respect of people who are important to me suffocates the life of my true self. It binds and inhibits my growth and restricts my freedom. We are humans being not human doings. It is so, we are so covered into, this is what I have, this is what I've done, this is what I've accomplished, and we're pushing our children and the next generation to do it too. This is in his book, you can see it, and that's kind of helpful. I just took a picture, knowing yourself and knowing God, I think it's, I don't know if that's the title of David Benner's book, but I can tell you. But these are some of the things that the false self, security and significance achieved by what we have, what we can do, and what others think of us, security and significance achieved by being deeply loved by God. Look at just all of this. Fulfillment found in surrender to God and living our identity, who we are and becoming. Because we live, this world is really shaping us into your eyes, your capacity, your IQ, where you were born, who your parents are, you know, which church are you going to? Like, there is just so much there that there's just so much fig leaves that can we really come and please know me? It is amazing when we realize that really our future should not and may not be defined by our DNA and by our upbringing, but let it be defined by who we are in him. So here, God's deepest desire for us is to replace our fig leaves with garments of durability and beauty. And I think I've been in a ministry for a long time, but when Hannah happens to us, it was somebody just recently telling me, I think I met you, Yelena, for the first time I came to visit your church. Hannah was 3 or 4. And he said, that this is a young man who is now a father. And he was telling me, there was a camp in our church and there were all these kids that came. He's a young boy that came to church. My husband was there. There's a lot of things happening. I came with Hannah for a few hours. And he said, for the first time in my life, I saw a child with disability, but that you, how helpless you were. I was chasing Hannah the whole time. And I remember she would sometimes scream, she would just be everywhere. And I'm like thinking, this is from the eyes of a young boy at that time, thinking, how are they doing? If he would have asked me then, I would probably think that I'm doing okay, but I didn't. And that is actually the time when Greg and I decided, even though we started the churches, that probably I would not attend or I will have to leave very often. And that has been, for the 15 years, my story. I love the church. I didn't even know I love it until I could not go to church regularly, actually. But I love it. I go rarely because I have to take care of Hannah. And what kind of God does that? What kind of God closes the door? I need the church. I need the people. But I could not go with Hannah. I had to very often leave. And I've been leaving. So then it was a long, long process until I started telling God everything. What kind of father are you? You never had a child with autism. I don't even know if you get it. I don't know if you even know. Why did you ask me to be in a ministry? Who can I actually minister? Is it really a ministry when I wipe Hannah's butt at the age of 20, change her maxi pads and give her a shower? Is that really where you want me? Is this really how you called me to serve you on this earth? Really? Now let me tell you, when I started being this open to him, I got to know him. What a father we have. I don't think I was... I fell in love with this father in heaven. But I think until I started raising Hannah, I was covered in fig leaves, what a pastor's wife should do, what a woman in ministry should do. And with Hannah, I just said, I cannot. And you know what? If he called me to take care of Hannah, you don't get it how honored I am. What an honor it is. And there's somebody, when I was preparing this, I thought, and then Daniela's not going to know exactly who I'm talking to. There's this young man, different disabilities. He's been in a foster system, and he's a young man now, yeah. But since he was a little kid, almost blind, disabled, many levels and issues. He's verbal. But he was finally adopted in a family, and his mother loves Jesus. When this man prays, this young man, when he's praying to God, he is not praying to God. He is talking to a friend. And when he starts praying, you really feel that God is sitting right there and he's telling him that. That's how alive, vivid, powerful God is. With all his disabilities, God gave him to see something amazing. And that is how we should come to God. I think the problem very often for us, you made it to ELF, so you're a leader, so you're smart, so you have college, and somebody actually also thinks that you are worthy of being here and recommended you here. So you made it, you are here. Very often your abilities are the biggest disabilities to get to know him. All these fig leaves that you are covered. And with all of that, it is very hard to help a broken human being. But there is, let's go to a good news. He was tempted too. He was human. And he was tempted to make the bread from the rocks. He was tempted to, his temptation was to power stones into bread, to fight identity and prestige. You know, here I am, I cannot even die here, I'm very powerful. And identity in possession, all the kingdoms. I'll give you everything. Jesus knew who he was and he could not therefore resist the temptation. He could, temptation, to live out a false center based on power, prestige, and possession. And it's what he's using, and we all know in this moment, he's using the word of God. The word, he's using truth to speak to the father of lies. Because we are so, I don't know, when was the last time you asked this question yourself? What are the lies that I still believe him? What are the lies that the devil is giving you and you believe him? What is the critical voice that is still putting us in a position of a tiny child? What are the things that we... So there are a few quotes. Identity grounded in relationship with the Father. What makes you most vulnerable and most like running for cover? What is the image of yourself that you are most attached? What is there that you're having a hard time of letting go? We don't find the true self by seeking it, rather we find it by seeking God. Okay, these are some of my, he was a completely human, raised by human parents. What is in him that the age of 12, this is what he says. When his parents were in Jerusalem, you know that, and they left and they lost him, forgot about him. Thank you, Mary and Joseph. There's grace and mercy for all of us. Then they remember, then took him 3 days to find him. He is. Did you not know that I must be busy with my father's affairs? Let me ask you something. What is Father asking of you? And what are the affairs that you should be involved? Is what you are doing exactly that? He's 12 here. I hope I would live my life busy with my father's affairs. This is where I need to be. This is where he wants me to be. And I'm busy with that. So completely grounded in identity, I know who my father is. He's 12. I'm busy with my father's affairs. And then he's going to come later on at the age of 30. The Spirit of the Lord has been given to me. And he speaks in synagogue. What a powerful moment. He is so deeply grounded in his identity. He knows who he is. He's tempted. He's human, but he knows who his father is. Do we grasp that Ephesians 1 talks about every one of us? Do we understand that your body, you are called and he wants that to be the temple of his spirit? Is it? Do we know whose name we carry, whose calling we have? Do we really get it? Do we know who we're praying to? To be, well, Martin said, to be a saint means to be myself. We cannot, okay, in place... The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. When he's calling you, It's a perfect match. It is that your deep calling is, and when I know who I am, and when I know what he wants me to do, and if that means taking care of Hannah, if that means coming to ALF, even though the schedule is crazy, if you want me here, I want to do my best. It is, in the place where God calls is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. Isn't that amazing? So, these are only the last two slides, and this is the story I want all of us to kind of chew on. I love this story. I love the Samaritan woman at the well, and I love what she came and what was her false self. I mean, have a quiet time and think about this. What is the things that she came? What are the things that she's hiding? What are the fig leaves that she's using? What are the things that she's not going to mention? What are the things that she's trying to cover? And what is the healing that he brings? What is the new narrative that Jesus gave her? And if you heard me ever mention and talk about this story, I love that at the well, who does meet? A bride and groom. The lover of your soul. And I love this story today. He, our Father, wants us to ask for abundance, and he's going to give us. I love that when he's asking the tough questions, it's not that, let me put you down and let me shame you here. So bring your husband. Well, I don't really have a husband. And you're right, you don't really have a husband. The one you are living with, you know, the sixth one, is not really your husband. Is he shaming her here? He's like, all the fig leaves, all the things that you're using, I know that that doesn't work. She's gonna leave. I love that, you know, the story. Disciples went to get the food. He stayed. He met her. Is he gonna eat with the disciples? No. Disciples are gonna think he already ate. He's gonna go to Samaria and eat there. You know what that means? That a marriage is arranged. I met the bride and I went to her family. It is so, he is calling us to something so deep and profound. I mean, all the psychologists and all of us that dig in and all the trauma and all the mess that we have and all the things that we use to cover, all the false self that we built there, he is bigger, bigger. And what he offers, it's more powerful than all the transgenerational trauma and damage done to the fathers of our fathers and to our fathers and to us. He is bigger. So my question to you today, how does the gospel restore your broken self-image? What are the truths that he spoke to restore you? Recognizing God's sovereignty in your life, do you see him being above it all? What is your calling? What is the calling that he gave you in your life? And rediscovering your first love. When he stands and knocks at the door, it's a door at the church. It's the door. He talks to church. He's not talking to, we use that as a description when we share the gospel with the non-believers. He's standing there knocking. He is asking to enter. When he asks to enter and he says to have a meal with us, to have fellowship with us, to be with us. And he cannot have it with our false self, you know, me presented in the best possible way. You, broken, sinful, and recklessly loved by the Lord of Lords. And when she left, she totally had a new calling. She shared the gospel with everybody in her village. She brought the village to him, and she brought him to the village. So my question, the last question, and I'm leaving you with this, what false narrative do I need to surrender? How is God calling me to deeper knowledge of him?